Welcome back to The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Maiken Scott. Last week, California health officials finally declared the Disneyland measles outbreak that infected 131 people over. The episode triggered a heated vaccine debate, though, since the outbreak was blamed on parents not vaccinating their children. California lawmakers are now debating a bill that would eliminate the state's personal belief and religious vaccine exemptions, and there are really heated debates going on over that. But none of this is new. People talking about stopping deadly diseases from spreading, it started a long time ago, before the Revolutionary War, with one founding father doing his best to shape public opinion on the issue. Alana Gordon and Pulse contributor Avir Mitra have this story.
Avir.
Alana.
I think we need to start this story out by going on a walk.
All right, where do you want to go?
Well, right across from WHYY, let's walk through this beautiful park by all these historic sites, like the Liberty Bell. Look, you've got people sitting, picnicking on the grass, tons of tourists walking around taking photos, horse carriage rides.
Yeah, and just imagine if half of these people, all these happy tourists, children, imagine if half of them were about to catch a terrible contagious disease. And of those, 25% would die a horrible death.
Are you trying to ruin my day? Why would I want to imagine that, Avir?
No, I'm just saying, just imagine it, because this really happened right here. And all you have to do is just walk back a short 300 years.
All right, let's cue up the scene-setting music.
Imagine it's 1721.
There's no electricity, running water. Still, people probably dealt with a lot of the same things we deal with today. Jobs, in-laws.
But they also had to deal with smallpox.
Typically what would happen is that a ship would pull into a port and there would be an infected sailor.
This is Carrie Youngdahl. She specializes in the history of vaccines at Philadelphia's College of Physicians.
And the sailor would come ashore and become ill, and then the disease would spread from that initial case.
So the disease would come to America in waves every few years and just destroy everything in its path.
It's hard to overstate how terrible of a disease smallpox was. Youngdahl showed us some pictures.
So the lips are swollen, the eyes are swollen shut, and the face is just a mass of black blisters.
It just looks like their face is being eaten away over time.
It was a terrible, terrible thing. And even after you died, people who wanted to bury you had to be very careful.
Dr. Howard Markell is a historian at the University of Michigan.
Don't forget, nobody knew about microbes or microbiology or the germ theory of disease. So it just seemed to come from above.
And you could get it simply from touching an infected blanket that hadn't been touched in weeks.
One of the worst outbreaks hit Boston in 1721, infecting nearly half the city. That's where Ben Franklin, he's just 15 years old, was living.
We'll get to that, but people were desperate for some hope.
Enter Cotton Mather.
We know him as one of the really important ministers in Boston.
Cristobal Silva is a professor of early American history at Columbia.
He was the first really strong proponent of inoculation.
Now, inoculation is not a new idea. It was being used in Asia and Africa for a long time, but it was brand new in America.
And Mather, he learned about it from Europe and from his slave, a man named Onesimus.
In inoculation, you actually give yourself smallpox deliberately.
And why?
The thinking is, give yourself a weaker form of the disease so you don't catch a worse form later. It's a precursor to the vaccine. Here's what you do.
Open up a blister or a pustule on the person with the case of the disease and take a thread and wet the thread in the fluid from the blister.
Ew.
You'd soak the thread.
And then you would let the thread dry out.
Wait a while.
You could then open up a wound with a sharp knife on the arm of the patient, the child, and then place the thread into the blood that was flowing from that wound.
And then let the smallpox infection take its course.
That is so gross.
It is incredibly gross. And yet, when you think that either 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 3 people died of smallpox, it was your best chance to avoid getting that terrible disease.
It is a rather counterintuitive strategy if you think about it, making healthy people sick.
Mather and a Boston doctor decided to start trying this out on their children, on their congregation. Apart from being disgusting, it was also very dangerous.
You would get a mild case of smallpox. That would be the best case scenario, but it wasn't perfect, and some people got very sick and not a few died.
You might wonder how the people of Boston took to this.
Now, they had some opposition.
A lot of people hated this idea, accusing Mather of playing God or doing something unsafe. And get this, at one point...
This is so crazy.
In the middle of the night, one day, someone throws a grenade into Cotton Mather's home.
But it had a note wrapped around it, and it said, Cotton Mather, you dog.
Damn you, Cotton Mather, I will inoculate you with this.
A pox to you.
Luckily for Mather, the bomb doesn't go off, it doesn't burn down his house, but it really was a serious debate.
And it was a debate largely fueled by the press.
Cotton Mather and his followers would publish in the official newspapers of the time.
But the anti-inoculators, they would publish in a new paper, the New England Courant. George Boudreau is a historian at LaSalle University.
They're producing what we now really look at as being the first independent voiced newspaper in New England.
And it just so happens that the New England Courant is owned by James Franklin, Ben Franklin's older brother.
And Ben Franklin, he's the printer.
This is the sound of the printing press at the Ben Franklin house in Old City. So Ben Franklin is literally putting the ink to the page and fueling so much of the hatred and fear of inoculation.
Wait, Ben Franklin, the anti-vaxxer?
Well, not quite. It's more complicated than that. But anyway.
The debate really quickly devolves, I would say, into name-calling and into a kind of tit-for-tat.
So you have Mather, a minister, supporting inoculation, and the leading opponent was a doctor.
Okay, that's kind of ironic. But remember, in the middle of all of this is 15-year-old Benjamin Franklin.
Probably from our perspective, if we had to look at him, he would have looked like a jock. You know, he was a printer's lad, so that means he had to run the press. So he would have had an upper body, you know, built like a rower.
And he's a smart guy.
He is just a native genius, which is kind of a rare thing.
But he and his brother do not get along.
They literally at points got into fistfights in the streets of Boston.
Okay, I get that. But during this time, Ben Franklin does sneak his way onto the paper, anonymously. He submits letters that were widely believed to be poking fun at Cotton Mather.
Historians don't know what young Ben Franklin's views of inoculation were at this time.
But he certainly was no public advocate.
That is until years later in Philadelphia. See, life in Boston wasn't working out for Ben Franklin. So he heads to Philly and makes a name for himself.
It's only in the 1730s that we start hearing from Ben Franklin about inoculation. Here's a letter he wrote to his sister.
And he writes, "We hear from New England that the smallpox spreads in diverse parts of the country. There is an account published in a number of persons inoculated in Boston in the month of March, accounting to 72, of which two only died, and the rest have recovered to perfect health." So he's actually trying to do what is, I think, a very scientific thing to figure out how this works.
This is classic Ben Franklin, who was one of our earliest American scientists. He is looking at the data.
So he's finding that inoculation is protecting people and that getting smallpox naturally was far deadlier.
But by the late 1730s, Ben Franklin is taking a real public stance. It almost becomes an obsession.
And he commissioned an English physician to write a discourse on inoculating for smallpox at home. So this is a procedure parents could do for their own children if they didn't have money to hire a physician.
Kind of a DIY pamphlet.
And it had some of the first actual epidemiological data on inoculation in surprisingly modern tables.
Explicitly endorsed by Ben Franklin.
It's really interesting to note that in 1774, Franklin was so concerned about the high cost of this procedure that he created the Society for Inoculating the Poor gratis. So it was the first Affordable Care Act of its day.
So that begs the question, Alana, what changed in the 1730s?
Good question. So smallpox did come in waves, and Franklin is observing the benefits of inoculation. But there's another part to this story.
It was really a personal story that happened to Ben Franklin, a personal tragedy that is both just heartbreaking, but also has great power even to this day.
In 1732, Franklin's son Frankie is born.
Wait, Frankie Franklin? That sounds like a rap name.
Well, it's Francis Folger Franklin, but yeah, they called him Frankie.
And this baby was just the greatest baby in the world, according to Ben Franklin. He was just a brilliant, gifted child. And in fact, Ben Franklin even got a tutor for his son when the boy was only two.
He's really the apple of his father's eye.
In a patriarchal world, this is his hope for the future.
But it just so happened that the next smallpox wave was on its way to town. So Ben Franklin had to make a decision. Frankie was four, and he had a case of the flux.
Flux is the old word for, well, diarrhea.
So not a huge deal, but that does complicate things. Do I inoculate my already sick child and put him at risk?
Or not? keep him sheltered and hope for the best.
So Franklin makes a fateful decision. He chooses to wait it out. He doesn't inoculate his son.
And Frankie, he catches smallpox, and it kills him.
The Franklins were devastated.
And to make matters worse,
stories started circulating in the press. Rumors started circulating. People said that the baby, or Frankie, developed it from an inoculation gone awry.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's not what happened at all.
So Ben Franklin decides to make a public statement.
On the death of his son, it's titled.
And he prints this in his paper just a few weeks later.
And I suppose the report could only arise from its being my known opinion that inoculation was a safe and beneficial practice, and from having said among my acquaintance that I intended to have my child inoculated as soon as he should have recovered sufficient strength from the flux. He's bleeding onto the page here. There's an almost vengeful intelligence after this, that he's studying smallpox. He's looking at it. He's looking at inoculation.
So, Alana.
Avir.
Since we started this out on a walk, I was thinking we could walk just a little farther. I wanted to show you something, and I think I have a good place for where we could finish this story.
Okay.
All right, so just follow me.
All right, so we're walking inside Christ's burial ground.
Yeah, now, like, let's go over to this corner here. I want you to check this out.
Oh my gosh, it's the grave of Frankie Franklin. And engraved in marble, right on it, is the delight of all who knew him.
What's crazy is in Ben Franklin's entire autobiography, he barely mentions this at all.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, he only talks about inoculation and this whole thing in one small paragraph in the entire book. Like, I brought the book with me, so I thought I'd read it. It goes, in 1736, I lost one of my sons, a fine boy of 4 years old, by the smallpox, taken in the common way. I long regretted bitterly and still regret that I had not given it to him by inoculation. This I mention for the sake of parents who omit that operation, on the supposition that they should never forgive themselves if a child died under it. My example showing that the regret may be the same either way, and that therefore the safer should be chosen.
Benjamin Franklin would die just 6 years before the introduction of the first vaccine in 1796. It would be based on a modified version of the virus, and so it would be much safer.
And that vaccine, it was for smallpox.
For The Pulse, I'm Avir Mitra.
And I'm Alana Gordon.
And this postscript. Smallpox was completely eradicated worldwide by the late 1970s. By the way, something pretty ridiculous but also really funny happened as Alana and Avir visited Ben and Frankie Franklin's graves, and they caught it on tape. Are you intrigued? You should be. Sign up for our newsletter at whyy.org/pulse newsletter.